The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Coming up on today's program, hopefully at the end of the show, we'll have some time for some listener feedback. We've had a stack of that. We've been tacking on to the end of our notes the last several programs, but just haven't gotten around to it. But hopefully today we can carve out some space to hear from you. Later on in the show, before that, we'll try to establish a theme on how that if you're exposing lawlessness, you really are going to risk making yourself out to be a massive target for the radical left. I'll develop that further in the second segment. How about this headline from Jerusalem Post? It says, the Attorney General says Netanyahu can stay in office for now. How about that? The Attorney General, Israel's Attorney General, says Benjamin Netanyahu can stay in office for now. He's not sure if he can stay long term, but for now he's going to go ahead and allow it. This Attorney General, this lawyer that nobody knew about, nobody heard of him, at least outside of Israel, until last week. And now he says the prime minister can stay. Isn't it incredible to just see how much power, just like Carolyn Glick said in that article I read yesterday, how much power these attorneys have? I guess now in the government pyramid in Israel, you have the attorney general at the top. Somewhere beneath that, I suppose, the prime minister, maybe he's equal with parliament. And then the ordinary Israeli citizens, I suppose they're way down at the bottom. It's like Carolyn Glick said in her piece, voters don't decide anything. The lawyers do. The voters put him into office. The lawyer says, I guess he can stay for now. One man, one lawyer, one attorney who thinks he's above the law. That's the truth of it. Glick says, politicians are irrelevant. The only people who count in Israel today are the unelected attorneys who run the country. Those are the only ones who count. And I know, sounding like a broken record, because I talked yesterday about these three nations, Ephraim, Manasseh, Judah. But look at, speaking of themes, look at this common theme. In all three nations, it wasn't that long ago here in the UK when you had 12, Boris Johnson decides there's to be a 5-week recess for Parliament. The Queen signs off on it. So you have the Queen and the Prime Minister, and then you have a handful of judges. Here come the attorneys, and they say, no, you can't do that. No, you can't have a 5-week recess. So the members of Parliament have to get back to work. Isn't it incredible how much power these attorneys feel like they have? Of course, we have all kinds of examples in the United States. Just yesterday, there was a low-level judge, an Obama appointee, who said that Don McGahn, he used to be a White House counsel. She's demanding that he submit to Congress's subpoena. He has to go and now testify. A White House attorney, someone representing the President of the United States. So much for attorney-client privilege. In that case, here's a low-level judge saying that because he's connected to Trump, Don McGahn. Now, this will probably be overturned. As I said yesterday, Mr. Trump, in one sense, has changed the courts. He's flipped a lot of the appellate courts, the Supreme Court even. In any event, here comes another one of, this is just one example of many, one judge that demands. This is a judge who thinks she has more power than the President of the United States. What about the 33-year-old whistleblower? He's not an attorney, so far as I know. He's a CIA operative. But here's the 33-year-old. We have to conceal his identity. He doesn't have to testify. He has all these connections to Joe Biden, to Susan Rice, everyone in the Obama administration, basically. And yet he is to be protected at all costs, not the president. He is to be protected, this whistleblower. In fact, we can develop a sham impeachment hearing based upon just what one CIA operative has to say in private with Adam Schiff's office. That's the United States. That's Great Britain. And that's little Israel today. As you recall from yesterday, if you heard the program, in that Carolyn Glick piece, she talked about how that one of these charges brought on, the Attorney General brought on against Prime Minister Netanyahu, regards press coverage, and how that good press coverage can now be considered bribery in Israel. So says this Attorney General. If you get positive press coverage, especially if you're a conservative, there must be something. There must be something sinister and evil that went down behind the scenes. And again, you could come up with examples of this in the United States as well. Look at the way they target Fox News. Look at the way they target talk radio. Bribery involving positive press coverage. Glick said in that article I read yesterday that this is a recipe for destroying freedom of the press and democracy itself. What is happening with the Western democracies, Israel, the United States, Great Britain? This article from Jewish News Syndicate. Ensuring nobody is above the law shouldn't mean changing the law. Okay, so yes, the president, the prime minister, they shouldn't be above the law. But there are provisions in place in the founding documents that can make sure that everyone has to abide by the law. But when you have an attorney come along who changes the law, who changes it on the fly, that doesn't solve any problems. That makes matters much worse. This syndicate piece says, in making his announcement, Mandelblit, that's the AG, said the law enforcement is not a choice. It's not a matter of politics. He also stated that the public interest requires that we live in a country where no one is above the law. Yet it has been clear since the moment the investigations began that prosecutors had their sights on removing Netanyahu from office and would stretch the limits of the law to make sure his conduct fell on the wrong side. This is an individual, this AG, who is stretching the limits of the law to make sure that he can ensnare Benjamin Netanyahu. You'll remember that tweet, I think I mentioned it on Friday's show last week, sent out by Mark Levin, who said that here we see another free nation destroying itself from within. Death by suicide, as Abraham Lincoln said. Look at what we're doing to ourselves. Look at the sickness from within. Look at the sickness in the head, as it says in Isaiah 1. That's what we stressed yesterday. And meanwhile, you look outside these three nations, you look at the world at large, it's a world descending into darkness. We're living in the last days. Perilous times are upon us, as the Apostle Paul wrote. This is from Haaretz. This is a left-wing newspaper in Israel. It says, in Germany, every Jewish celebration is a collective act of defiance against a rising, violent far right. Every Jewish celebration, if they're celebrating and they're Jews, they've got to look over their shoulders in Germany, because they make themselves to be a target by the single fact that they happen to be Jewish. And here Germany's headed up by a woman who's been in the office for a long time, and she's on the way out. There was a piece in The Guardian, I think, today. Listen to this. It reminds you, or at least it did me, of that classic quote from Herbert Armstrong that we've played so many times. The Guardian says Merkel's is a government for undemanding times, with none of the ambition needed to face the giant challenges of today. It says, if Germany is the heart of Europe, then it is currently the slow-beating heart of a well-fed businessman resting on his office couch after an ample lunch. For Europe's sake, and for Germany's own, that heart needs to beat a little faster. Germany needs a new heart, says The Guardian. Germany needs a new leader. Germany needs a stronger leader. That's what they're calling for at the left-wing Guardian here in the UK. Even as it does everything that it can to take down Boris Johnson, a relatively strong leader, certainly stronger than many others who are options in the upcoming election on December 12th. They want to destroy the leadership in their own countries, and then they simultaneously call upon Germany to go for a stronger leader. A heart that beats a little faster. You think of that soundbite from Herbert Armstrong. How that Germany is the beating heart of Europe. Well, this Haaretz Pete's, I mean, here, if you're a Jew in Germany, you better be careful. It says, but shadowed by thousands of armed extremists and an ascending political far right, they face a fateful choice. Stay or go. So we're in November of 2019, and Jews in Germany are facing a fateful choice. Should we stay in Germany or should we go? Haaretz says, yet while many Jews are indeed planting roots in Germany, there cannot be complete confidence that history will not repeat itself. This is astounding to me. This is an opinion piece at The Guardian. We can't know for sure if history won't repeat itself. So, it says, just as British Jews are applying for EU passports, fearful of the repercussions of post-Brexit chaos, nationalist scapegoating, and or a Corbyn-led government, it is an open secret that German Jews are considering an escape route as well, just in case. It's an open secret, says The Guardian. It says, at the time when every fourth German says they can imagine something like the Holocaust repeating itself, one in four? Can this be true? One in four in 2019? One in four Germans saying that, well, I can imagine something like the Holocaust happening again. It says there simply is no absolute confidence within the Jewish community that German society will do enough to stop the slide into barbarism again. We can't be confident. As a Jew in Germany, Jews are saying, you know what? We can't really be confident that Germany will do enough to stop this slide into barbarism. It says, so the best the real people can do when they refuse to be ruled only by fear or only by a tragic notion of lone heroism is to prepare for both possibilities, life in Germany or life abroad. It says German Jews are building here and being as steadfast as they can despite the state of siege. They're also considering the difficult questions of Exodus, but with Jewish communities feeling vulnerable, from the U.S. to the U.K. to France, it's not clear in anyone's minds where they might go. Well, there's just a rising tide of anti-Semitism worldwide. Hatred for the Jews, not just in Germany, even right here in the U.K. There was an article today, by the way, in the Times of London by Britain's, or it's an article, I guess, either by Britain's chief rabbi or he's quoted in it. It was in the news stack I went through, but this is the chief rabbi here in Britain. And this is what he said. A new poison, sanctioned from the top, has taken root in the Labour Party. Many members of the Jewish community can hardly believe that this is the same party that they called their political home for more than a century. It's obviously talking about Jeremy Corbyn and how little that party has done to purge the party of hatred for the Jews. And here's a Jewish rabbi who's saying, I'm just shocked. And the fact that Corbyn could actually come to power in a couple of weeks. This rabbi says, the Jewish community has watched with incredulity as supporters of the Labour leadership have hounded parliamentarians, members, and even staff out of the party for challenging anti-Jewish racism. They've just hounded people out of the party. Look, if you're gonna stand up and say, look, we can't be racist, you got to go. The hatred for Jews, it runs so deep in that party. The rabbi says, and all of this while in opposition, what should we expect of them in government? What if they gained a majority? What if they took control of the government? Right now, they're just the opposition party. Well, it's a good question. It says the way in which the leadership has dealt with anti-Jewish racism is incompatible with the British values of which we are so proud. That's from Britain's chief rabbi, speaking of an insidious and spreading cancer, hatred for Jews, right here in the UK. Is the world progressing toward a utopia? Or is it, as Paul said, an evil world that's getting worse and worse? I didn't have time to get to an article yesterday about the internment camps, to put it nicely, I guess. Some would say concentration camps. In China, 1 million Chinese citizens in detention, locked away in concentration camps. And there were reports over the weekend that gave us a better look at what these camps are actually like. China, of course, for its part, says that, well, they're just education centers. Just giving people some voluntary job training, okay? And now some classified documents have been leaked. And they show that what China has said, it's a blatant lie. Some of the things that have been revealed from these documents. The camps have watchtowers, doors with two locks, and video surveillance to prevent escape. It says here, a 2017, Richard compiled these stats for me, or these insights. A 2017 report from a local branch of the Xinjiang Ministry of Justice said that the camps aim to wash brains, cleanse hearts, support the right, remove the wrong. They're there to be brainwashed. These are dissidents. And we've got to brainwash them. It says Muslims are locked in cells with many others, told not to pray. Talk is forbidden. Guards torture prisoners with beatings and electric shocks. They enforce the Chinese language, Mandarin. People who can't answer in Mandarin, they're beaten. Deprived of food, forced to be silent. Women are raped. Prisoners given drugs to keep them sedate. This is in your world, 2019. We've talked about Hong Kong in recent programs. Some of the dissidents there or the protesters there being carted off on trains. Where are they going? Where were they sent? Will we see them again? Well, people who submit to the authoritarian rule in China, if they learn the language, if they're obedient, if they conform to Chinese culture, then they might even be rewarded with family visits. Or perhaps, if especially good, they might be allowed to graduate and leave. If not, what a future for those who won't submit to the communist rule in China. They didn't see us as humans, said a former teacher, a teacher who was there in one of these camps. They treated us like animals, like pigs, cows, sheep. See, this is China removing all dissenting voices, and we're getting a little bit of a glimpse into how they're going to crack down on Hong Kong. They're already doing it. These documents, this is one commentator, they confirm that this is a form of cultural genocide. It really shows that from the onset, the Chinese government had a plan. They're not going to tolerate dissent. They're not going to tolerate protesting. 1 million prisoners. That's hard to believe in this age. 2019, we've talked in recent weeks about just the spread of protests. Hong Kong's one example of many. Protests all over the world. The LA Times weighed in this morning from Chile to Sudan, Lebanon to Colombia. Mounting anger and frustration over rising economic and social inequality, political corruption, and disillusionment with democratically elected and authoritarian governments have led to a wide array of mass protests in recent months. We've seen it even in Iran, in Iraq as well. Lebanon, I think the article mentioned Lebanon. But all over the world, here again, what did the Apostle Paul say? He said, in the last days, you're going to be entering into dangerous times, perilous times. Herbert Armstrong, writing back in the 1950s and 60s, he said about his boyhood years in the late 1800s, the early 1900s, when I was a little boy, 90 years ago, I guess he was writing this in the 80s then, when I was a boy 90 years ago, those conditions were not true or escalating as they have been within the last 20 or 30 years. The conditions that Paul wrote about in 2 Timothy 3, he means. It wasn't like that when I was a boy, but look at where we are now, he said, in the 1980s. Well, here we are today in 2019. And consider what's happening in China, or to Jews in Germany, or with our governments in Israel, in the UK, in the United States. He said the weapons have never existed in all history that could have laid all cities to waste. Jesus, remember, prophesied in Matthew 24 that unless the days of the great tribulation are shortened, there would no flesh be saved alive. Well, that passage in 2 Timothy 3, you can go on and read about it. It talks about the perilous times, of course, and then it describes human nature in all of its ugly colors. Human nature, and in that same chapter, then it talks about evil waxing worse and worse and worse. It says we're lovers of pleasure. We love pleasure more than we love God. Here's what Mr. Armstrong said. This is from Are We in the Last Days? Time was when some wild-eyed freak shouting a doomsday warning was ridiculed as off his rocker. But today, serious world leaders and scientists are saying grave things about the current drift in world conditions. Well, he said that about the so-called scientists and leaders of his day, the 1980s. But how many world leaders are even sounding the alarm? The leaders in Ephraim and Manasseh and Judah, they're preoccupied with the attack, the relentless attack coming from the radical left, coming from their own countrymen. He says here, but today, serious world leaders, well, I read that. Let me just switch to the missing dimension in sex. It says, he's talking about the family breakdown in this case, and because of this family breakdown, he says, civilization as we know it is on the way down and out, unless, as he went on to say, unless God intervenes. Well, thank God that he will. Matthew 24 assures us of that. Jesus said the days will be cut short for the elect's sake. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
I think it was last week when we mentioned that article referring to President Obama when he came into office in 2009. I think it was before even the inauguration when he put all of the U.S. ambassadors on notice and said that, hey, we want you out on the day of inauguration because we've got to make room for my appointees. We've got to make room for my ambassadors, my people. Well, this article here from the Daily Caller, keep in mind, we're now 3 years on from Donald Trump's election, and this Daily Caller piece says that a quarter, 25% of America's nearly 200 embassies around the world have vacant ambassadorships, leaving foreign policy in the hands of career foreign service bureaucrats like Bill Taylor. That's the one that's in charge in Ukraine. They can't get approved by Congress. Now, President Trump has been able to get quite a few judges appointed, but here we are 3 years in, and he still can't get a fourth of the ambassadors through. It says that later on in the piece that when the president can't get his ambassador nominated, that the embassy is essentially run by the chargé d'affaires, so that's basically a State Department person. And that, if you think about the impeachment hearings, and all of these people testifying, all of these Obama people, that basically took issue with the way President Trump worked Ukrainian policy through a back channel to try to get what he wanted to get done, to try to make sure that the corruption was investigated, the corruption that even prominent Americans are tied into. It's no wonder this war between the deep state and this presidency intensifies. Now, speaking of those impeachment hearings, this is from Newsbusters talking about the coverage that the major networks gave to those 2 weeks of hearings. NBC, I think it breaks it down, actually. NBC gave about, or all of them, I guess, gave about 75 hours of coverage to the proceedings. And for NBC, they led the way, covering 92% of the hearings, 30 total hours of testimony. And keep in mind, if you're not from America, the big networks, NBC, CBS, and ABC, they're not on cable. That's not a cable news show. They've got all their daytime programming, which they basically had to set aside to run these some would say, boring hearings that, by the way, didn't get the kind of viewership that the big networks were hoping. But that didn't stop them. They just kept showing 92%. In the case of NBC, CBS ran 84% of the hearings on live television. ABC pitched in and ran 75%. And this Newsbusters piece says that you compare that to November of 1998, Bill Clinton's impeachment from 21 years ago, and NBC aired 26% of the hearings, CBS 42%, and ABC 36%. Isn't that revealing? You see, it's not just their reporting that it's, you know, swings radically to the left. You also see the bias in what they choose to cover or not cover. In the case of Bill Clinton's impeachment proceedings, they weren't as concerned about covering that. They didn't want the American people to get involved in that impeachment. This time around, it was very different. Well, even still, there's polls coming out now. This one from The Hill, it says Democratic voters appear to be losing interest in House Democrats' ongoing impeachment inquiry. So even with all of this wall-to-wall coverage, Democratic voters are losing interest. They haven't even made the case to their own base. Well, they've probably got the hard core of the base, no matter what's happening. But there's Democratic voters now that say they've lost interest. This piece from Fox, I think just today, it says Michigan Democratic rep. This is a representative in Congress, a prominent supporter of Kamala Harris, who has previously supported the impeachment inquiry into President Trump, abruptly announced Sunday that she no longer saw any value in the process and called for her fellow Democrats to throw their support behind a symbolic censure resolution. Now, we touched on this yesterday. Which way are they going to go? Because if they go forward, they are sure to be they're sure to be exposed all the more. No matter what happens with the vote in the Senate, and of course everyone's saying there's no way there's going to be a conviction there. But if they go ahead and they get the 218 votes in the House, if they go ahead and impeach, then, as you heard on yesterday's show, the president has said, I welcome a trial. This is crazy. I shouldn't be impeached in the first place. But if they're so deranged that they're going to go through with this, then I'd prefer to have a trial. He knows, you see. He knows he's going up against, well, as he said on Friday, he's going up against some sick people. This is part of a clip we played just yesterday, clip one.
We'll see what happens.
Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, you have a lot of very, very bad people. And, you know, a lot of people say deep state. Right. I don't like to use the word deep state. I just say they're really bad, sick people.
Bad, sick people. This is what Netanyahu's going up against. There are some, as I covered yesterday, there are some parallels with what's happening in Little Judah. And in America today, my father, remember, in the radical left, saving America from the radical left temporarily, he makes the point that if Hillary Clinton had won, none of this corruption would have come to light. None of it. We wouldn't know any of this. Some of the things we've talked about on this program over the last 3 years. It's a relentless assault on the current president. That's true. But at the same time, just think about Think about the lawlessness that has been exposed, fully exposed, right under the clear light of day. We're seeing, as my father said, just how far the radical left is willing to go to return to power. They don't have a respect for law. They see themselves as above the law. They're stretching the law, as that article said about the Israeli attorney general. They stretch it to make sure they can ensnare their opponents, their political opponents. Isaiah 59, I just want to make this point about if you do expose, and President Trump has done that, and a few others, maybe not nearly enough, but a few have joined him in that effort. But if you do that, you are going to make yourself an especially big target for these deep state operatives, for the bureaucratic state. Isaiah 59, remember, speaks of truth failing. And it says, if you depart from evil, you make yourself a prey. If you try to stand up for the law, if you revere the law, or in the case of what we've seen in recent weeks, if you expose lawlessness on the other side, you make yourself a prey. You make yourself a target. I had this article from the New York Times. What was this? 2 weeks ago, I guess it was. It's by Ken Vogel. And just remember that name. We'll come back to it in just a second. But this article, it's really an attack on John Solomon. And John Solomon, if you watch Fox News, you've probably seen him on, I think, Sean Hannity's show and probably some other shows as well. He used to write for The Hill. That ended a month or two ago. I think I might have touched on this just briefly. He's got his own website now. He's a contributor for Fox News. But they, during the impeachment hearings, they really went after Solomon because of all of these things the president and his team was saying about the corruption in Ukraine and how they meddled in the 2016 election. The president alluded to that in the July 25th phone call to President Zelensky. But the left, you see, rising in defense. Well, not even in defense. They are going on offense. They went right after John Solomon and said all of this so-called Ukraine conspiracy or meddling into the election, that's just a conspiracy theory, and it's largely because the president relies upon Fox News and Fox News relies upon John Solomon. And so they have to destroy John Solomon, his reputation, for all the reporting that he did about Ukraine. This is Kenneth Vogel's piece from November 12th. And it says here, one witness, he's referring to the impeachment hearings, one witness testified to Congress that an article of his was full of non-truths and non-sequiturs. You'll remember the former ambassador, Yovanovitch, she said, I've been smeared. I was in office as ambassador there. And then I got smeared by John Solomon and Fox News and Sean Hannity and all them. She was so mistreated, said the mainstream media. And so here's the New York Times going after John Solomon, whose articles are full of non-truths. Another witness said that he could not recall a single thing that was correct in one of Mr. Solomon's stories. I mean, that's pretty bad. Not one single thing? Well, dig a little deeper into this New York Times article because it's pretty revealing. It says, in late March, Mr. Solomon and his team published pieces in The Hill making sensational claims of misconduct at the State Department. The American ambassador to Ukraine, a career Foreign Service officer who assumed her post during the Obama administration, that would be Yovanovitch, had privately badmouthed Mr. Trump. Separately, had previously provided Yuri Lutsenko, Ukraine's prosecutor general at the time, a list of individuals that Mr. Lutsenko said that Mr. Lutsenko should not prosecute. And so, according to John Solomon's reporting, this career diplomat, this Obama appointee, when she was ambassador in the transition from Obama to Trump, when she got, well, when it got closer to 2018, or I guess this is the early part of 2019 now, Solomon said that she was bad-mouthing President Trump and that she gave the Ukrainian prosecutor a list of people not to prosecute, not to investigate. Stay clear of so-and-so. And so Yovanovitch didn't like this. And as you heard during the hearing, she said, well, I was smeared. My reputation was smeared. In fact, it's just the opposite, as I said last week. So the New York Times really keys in on this list. Okay, was there really a list that Yovanovitch gave to Lutsenko? Don't investigate these individuals. Here's what the Times reports. But there was less to the do not prosecute list than it appeared. So you hear the mainstream reporting. They followed up on this and found out that, yeah, John Solomon's report, it wasn't right. It wasn't accurate. But listen to this. It says the State Department dismissed it as an outright fabrication. Mr. Lutsenko changed his story and acknowledged that what he is quoted describing in Mr. Solomon's report, a list of people whom we should not prosecute, given to him by the ambassador, did not actually exist. So that's the big reveal. According to the New York Times, there wasn't a list. And John Solomon said that there was. And they're quoting Lutsenko, who corrected the record. But listen to the next paragraph. It says, in an interview with the New York Times last month, Mr. Lutsenko blamed the confusion on the interpreter who handled his interview with The Hill. But he insisted that the ambassador, Yovanovitch, had in fact asked him not to target certain politicians and activists who worked with the embassy on its anti-corruption efforts. So there was no actual list. And Lutsenko says, well, that is true. But then he insists, he maintains the fact that there were certain individuals that she said, don't you mess with them. Don't target them. Don't investigate them. That's right there within the New York Times piece. And the whole point of this piece is that where is Donald Trump getting all this flawed information about Ukraine and its meddling into the elections and this corruption here and this needs to be investigated? They're getting it all from John Solomon. And what's incredible about this New York Times piece, it's by Kenneth Vogel, as I said, it's just from a couple of weeks ago. And it's Kenneth Vogel who wrote, I've gone through this article before, the Politico piece from January of 2017, the week before the inauguration. It's Kenneth Vogel who revealed the Ukrainian efforts to sabotage Donald Trump. That's from 2017 when he was writing for Politico. So here, the New York Times article, it's concerned about the accuracy of John Solomon's reporting, when people should be stepping back and saying to Kenneth Vogel, look, you're saying all of this news about, or this what Trump is saying about Ukraine is a conspiracy theory. In fact, you wrote about it in January of 2017. This is Ken Vogel. Donald Trump wasn't the only presidential candidate whose campaign was boosted by officials of a former Soviet bloc country. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermined Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office. They also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump aide, that's Manafort, in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter, only to back away after the election. And you can continue to go through this article. You know how many pages it is? 17 pages. This investigation. Kenneth Vogel investigating Ukraine's meddling of the 2016 election. It's a 17-pager. And today, of course, that has been carefully erased from the record. Well, not literally, thanks to Google, thanks to the internet. But it's as if those articles were never written. You read the New York Times piece from 2 weeks ago, and it's Kenneth Vogel himself. It's the same journalist who's taking a very different approach. Very, very different. Boy, John Solomon, can't trust what he writes. But me? Kenneth Vogel, you can certainly trust what I have to say. They go after John Solomon, or more recently, they go after Rudy Giuliani, who went to Ukraine, who's investigated much of this corruption. And, of course, the nonstop attacks on Devin Nunes, those continue as well. We had a program on that just, I guess, last year. All of these investigations into Nunes, at one point, he had to recuse himself from the House Intelligence Committee, I think for 8 months, so that he could fight back. This is from the Federalist. Don't let the left's cynical hit on Nunes and Giuliani work again. It says one CNN exclusive and one tweet in a matter of 24 hours put into focus several vague and seemingly unconnected events. First came CNN's Friday report that a lawyer for the Soviet-born American, Lev Parnas, says his client is willing to tell Congress that Republican Rep. Devin Nunes met with former Ukrainian Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin last December in Vienna to discuss digging up dirt on Joe Biden. That same story stressed that Parnas, who is currently under indictment for campaign finance violations, has connections to Trump's personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. These were some big CNN, more blockbusters from CNN last week, last Friday. We're exposing Nunes. We're exposing Giuliani. Well, if you also were following the news over the weekend, I think Nunes, he made plans to sue CNN and the Daily Beast for their reporting last Friday or last week. And then Giuliani, for his part, he was all over Twitter and interviews talking about this pattern of corruption that Washington was caught up in with Ukraine for years. And he says, you know, I'm going to uncover this. And he's the right man for the job, even if he's not always the perfect man for, you know, delivering the message. As the mayor of New York, he certainly did face off against a lot of corruption when he was a prosecutor for the Southern District of New York. He went head-to-head with the mafia. So he knows a little something about facing corruption, exposing corruption. But as I said at the top of the show, when you do that, you make yourself a prey. There's another great piece at the American Greatness about Nunes, this farm kid, fighting back. And in looking at the clock, I just have to cut this short. I think what I'll do is just save it for a lengthier segment tomorrow, and then just use these last few minutes, or at least after a quick break, these last few minutes to go through some listener feedback. So hopefully that'll whet your appetite, what we covered here in the last few minutes. Hopefully it'll whet your appetite for tomorrow's live broadcast. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can submit feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
One listener from Australia writes in, I just had to email you because of your Friday program, the lecture at the end about Paul's powerful prayers and going boldly to God. I was listening to that program while driving, and I had just prayed that morning, a fervent prayer, requesting something from God. While listening to the program, it reminded me of my prayer from the morning. And as you were talking, a notification appeared on my phone answering the very prayer. Everything just coincided perfectly, and I think God timed it that way to have extra impact on me. That's someone writing in response to the programs last week, Friday in particular, about being bold, going boldly before the throne, God's throne of grace. Another one here says this last week of programs have been so wonderfully encouraging for me. The way you speak about due diligence, perseverance, no matter what, relaxed faith and confidence has been so helpful. No matter the trial or mistakes you make, God never gives up on us. It is emotional to think about when carnality steers us the wrong direction too often, but we must never give up. We must do better for God and His purpose. There's too much at stake to move backwards. Thanks again. Another one here says, thanks for this Between the Eyes program regarding the Bible's biggest little word, if. God promises us any and every single thing, but we must make effort on our part. We cannot bear fruit without doing something. It's all contingent upon our willingness to pray, study, and fast. I've come to finally know that is exactly what the Bible means in God's codes when He says to ask, seek, and knock. Those words really mean pray and study and fast. And wow, I believe time is about up. I have so little time to get this right. Another one here says it truly is a beautiful picture of the confidence Paul had in God to give him the courage to face his death. It says here, Paul had great peace of mind because God was with him, powerful. We all need God to be with us. Another one here says, great program. Please do more about him who pulls back and what exactly that means with more in-depth information. That's one requesting more content on the individual who, as it says in Hebrews 10, who draws back instead of stepping forward to the task, stepping forward to help God, to support God. Another one here says, thank you very much for all the hard work and dedication that goes into research, editing, and all of the many details that go into producing each program. I would be lost without all the vital information that's freely given. Thanks again. A couple here coming in from the live broadcast on Facebook. It says, thank you, PCG, for sharing God's truth of His holy word and the end-time gospel of God's coming kingdom and keeping up the good, enduring just fight of living faith in God's work. Another one says simply, love these guys. Probably referring to Sam and Parker. Another one, thank you from New Brunswick, Canada. Another short one here, or there, I guess, as I say. Another one here says, thank you very much for posting this great radio program with closed caption messages that are helpful to the deaf community. This one here is an email, came in a week or two ago. It says, just to let you know that your example of excellence in broadcasting is much appreciated. Thank you for all you do. Would love to get the Daily onto the national network here in the U.S. It needs to be heard by Israel in these dark times that we're in. I sigh a lot given the degenerative state that we're now in. Tell your father that this new booklet on Hebrews is a timely, reflectively stirring, insightful, and it's very well presented. Thank him for his continued ongoing service to God and to us. Another one here, the last one, I guess. Let's see. Skipping a longer one here. The last one I'll read is a shorter bit. It says, it's really unbelievable what this president has been asked to endure. I sure hope this is settled and they all get back to running this great nation as it should be. A house divided will not stand. That's in response to some of the coverage that we've had for the impeachment hearings. I guess I have time for one or two more short ones. It says, thank you very much for all the hard work and dedication that goes into research, editing, and all of the many details into producing each program. Another one, there's so much to learn about all world conditions and our life's challenges. Since listening to Trumpet Radio and the Key of David, it is the right start to know the truth. Many prayers and keep up the great work. Well, that's about all that we have time for on today's show. If you'd like to submit feedback, don't forget to email us, td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.